in on the way to Trasad to get at me. Why? The Murkan reached for the strange helmet covering his face and slowly took it off. Mark stared. The Murkan didn't resemble the Tasuk or anyone else Mark had run across in this world. Instead, he looked more like... I knew you were smart. The Murkan put his helmet back on. You're right. I am not from Transal. I am from your time. At least close to it. What year was it when you came through the warp? You? You came here through the light? Then you know where it is and how to get back. Now why would I want to do that? I knew one day someone else was bound to find the warp. And it was just a question of time. I was hoping it would be far in the future, however. Long after my kingdom had ended. When I heard about you, I knew something had to be done. What are you talking about? Mark asked. We can work together to get back. But that's just it. I don't want to go back. I am the ruler of the universe here. These people are putty in my hands, ignorant fools. These savages think I am the wisest, most powerful being that ever existed. Mark sat on one of the benches. That's another thing I don't understand. How did all this happen? What caused these changes? From what I have been able to determine, there was a massive plague from a strain of virus much like the Ebola carried by African monkeys. It was very contagious and apparently an awfully painful way to die. If you contracted it, blood seeped out of every opening in your body until nothing was left. Scientists tried everything, but they couldn't find a cure. It swept over the world, killing at least 70% of the population. The infrastructure broke down. Whole countries were virtually depopulated, and for several generations the virus kept the population so low there could be no progress. Finally, when the virus at last died out, so much time had passed that everything useful had been forgotten. The human race had to start over. It must have been something to see. The virus didn't cause the changes in the people and plant life. What did that? That has been a little harder to piece together. Best I can tell, when major powers like the United States began to crumble, the nuclear weapons were taken over by terrorists who shot them off at will. Everything on Earth underwent a tremendous chemical change, and over the next 2,000 years only the strongest of any species survived. What about the light? The light is a time warp, a freak of nature. I found it in the desert in the 1980s when I escaped from a prison detail in Arizona. It was unbelievable. I wanted out, and presto, I was so far out they could never find me. Don't you want to go back? What about your family and friends? Weren't you listening? I told you I was in prison. I had no family. I had nothing. Here, I have everything. And I don't intend to let you take it away from me. I don't want to take anything. All I want to do is find that light. And what if you never find it? Soon, you will start talking and teaching these people. I saw the armor you had made. What else have you taught them? Reading? How to build weapons? I can't allow that. Soon they might rise up and use it all against me. You're a lunatic. I'm walking out of here. The Murkan unsheathed the sword. I don't think so. Mark threw his cape off and reached for his own sword. He had it out barely in time to parry a blow aimed at his head. Someone has taught you well, boy, but not well enough. The Murkan came at him from the side. Mark leaped away, but the tip of the blade ripped through his shirt. He whirled, bringing his sword around hard. The Murkan was ready. He jumped and swung again, pushing Mark backward onto one of the benches. Now you're going to die, and no one from either world will ever know what happened to you. The Murkan forced Mark flat on his back. Before I kill you, Kakon, you should know that you never would have found the light. It strikes where it wants, randomly. There is no predictable pattern. He pushed his blade closer to Mark's face, the sharp edge inches from his throat. Mark shoved him, but the Murkan was too strong. Then Mark raised his knees and kicked. The Murkan lost his balance, and Mark rolled off the bench. Mark scrambled to his feet and started swinging. He brought his sword up the way Sabro had taught him and sliced the Murkan's stomach. A red stain appeared on the man's shirt. The Murkan stumbled and gasped for breath. Mark pressed in, hacking and probing, and with a wild sweep knocked the sword from the Murkan's hand. "Now we will see who's going to die," Mark raised his sword. A tremendous explosion shook the building. Roan and Jod burst through the side door, each carrying a bulging sack. Roan winked at him. "If you are almost done with your business, Gacon, I suggest we leave now. Frankel used a little more of the powder than you told him to. Half the wall on the east side is gone and all their beasts have run off." Mark slowly lowered his sword. "I am finished. This man has nothing I want." "Surely you're not gonna leave him alive?" Jod asked incredulously. "His wounds are fatal. Let him die the slow, painful death he deserves." Mark reached for the Murkan's helmet and placed it on his own head. "Frankel will be waiting for us." The courtyard was in chaos. The Murkan's men were running everywhere. Frankel and the others were already mounted. Mark took some of the powder and poured it on the steps of the stronghold. When he was a good distance away, he grabbed one of the torches and threw it onto the powder. The blast blew logs and men everywhere. The whole front of the building vanished. Roan handed Mark his reins. "Not a bad night's work, outlaw." Mark jumped on his mount. "Let's ride." Chapter 49. It was early morning. Mark built up the fire and sat staring into it. There was no question that the Murkan was insane. He was so power-hungry he couldn't see past himself. It had been a waste of time to come to Lystra. Mark sighed. For now, he and the band of robbers were safe deep in the forest, and there were lookouts posted in case the Murkan's men tried to come after them. The large sacks of tribute still sat where Roan and his men had dropped them the previous night. Everyone was so worn out from the long ride that they were sleeping on the ground, still wearing their weapons. Jod had been furious with Mark for not killing the Murkan, and Mark couldn't really explain to himself why he hadn't done it. Maybe it had something to do with finally finding a real link to his own time. Footsteps sounded behind him. He turned to see Roan coming to join him at the fire. "You are up early, Cacon. What is the matter? Can you not wait to receive your share of the booty?" Mark threw a stick in the fire. "I'm telling you the truth, I'm not much interested. You guys can split my share." Roan cocked his head. "You are different from anyone I have ever met. Not just in the way you look, but in the way you think." The young man warmed his hands. "You can trust me with your story, Cacon. I will understand." "My story is that the Murkan considers me a threat to his kingdom, and I thought he had some information I needed. It turns out we were both wrong." "What will you do now? He's certain to send men to hunt for you." "I really don't know. I guess the only thing left to do is go on searching for answers. Maybe I'll go back to my village for a while. There's a girl there." Roan sat up. "A girl? How can I help? My men are at your disposal." A loud bird call shrieked through the morning air. Roan jumped to his feet. "The lookout! Someone is in the forest!" Mark followed Roan through the trees to a thick stand of brush, where they crouched and waited. In minutes, a large column of men in heavy armor rode by. When they were well out of sight, Roan motioned for Mark to return to the camp with him. "Did you see the man riding at the head of the column, Cacon?" "Not really. Who is he?" "That was Mordo, the Murkan's son. He is even more ruthless than his father." At camp, everybody was moving. Frankel, Jod, and the others had been awakened by the bird call. They had doused the fire and were preparing to leave. "Who was it?" Jod asked. "Do they already look for us?" Roan nodded. "It appears so, and Mordo is leading them. We had better move farther back into the woods." You and your men go on ahead, Mark said. I think it's a good time for me to be going my own way. What is this? Chad asked. You would leave us without your share of the spoils?
He has to go, Chad.
Roan slapped Mark on the back. He does not have time for riches. He has a girl waiting for him somewhere. Mark started to explain, but then decided not to. Instead, he untied his animal. I have enjoyed your company. You are welcome to make camp with me any time. And you are always welcome in ours. Roan handed him an extra water pouch. Take this. You will need it if you are going back through the desert. He watched Mark climb onto his beast. I hope you find what you are looking for, Cacon. Mark waved and turned around.
Me too, Roan. Me too.
Chapter 50. The trip back across the desert had been uneventful and lonely. Mark had deliberately stayed away from Trisad and visited the sparse waterholes only after dark. It had given him time to think. If it was true that the blue light struck randomly, then there was very little hope of his ever returning to his family in his own time. He knew he would still search for it, but finding it would be like looking for a single grain of sand on a beach. It was time to face the fact that he had to make a life in this world. There was just one place he wanted to go now. Back to the village. It was the only semblance of a home that he had on this strange new earth. He wanted to go there and see all the familiar faces he had left behind. And then he wanted to sleep. Sleep for a week. He rode with slack reins and let his beast have its head. They were getting close. The Red Valley loomed before him. It was all he could do not to break into a run. A hunting horn sounded from behind a boulder on the mountain. The sound made Mark smile. It was good to be back. As he approached the village wall, there was another blast from the tower horn, identifying him as a friend. Mark rode through the gates and up the main street. Everything was just as he'd left it. Tybor the blacksmith was busy working in his lean-to, and the people were attending to their daily chores. Everyone waved and shouted greetings as he passed. Tybor wanted to know what had taken him so long to come back. A cloud of dust came flying at him from the other end of the street. A boy on a gray beast pulled up in front of him. "I knew it was you," he burst out. Mark squinted in mock disbelief. "Could this be Barrow? I can't believe it. You've grown into a warrior while I was gone." Barrow sat up a little straighter on his mount. "It will not be long now, Cacon." He turned and rode beside Mark. "I've taken care of all your things as you asked me to. I think you will be pleased."
"Mark, you are back."
Lita waved at him from Tanta's storehouse. She put down her supplies and hurried over.
"It is so good to see you. I was worried because you have been away so long. Any news about the light?"
"The light strikes where it wants to. Finding it is a hopeless dream. That part of my life is over. I've decided to put it behind me and get on with my new life. How have things been with you?"
"Good. I have become accustomed to living with the Tusuk. I have been put in charge of many things. One of them is keeping an eye on your young friend, Barrow. He gives me fits, though, and it is almost impossible to watch him now that you have given him that beast."
Mark winked at Barrow. "Every warrior needs a beast."
"Huh, you are a bad influence."
Lita pretended to be upset. Then she smiled.
"I must get the things from the storehouse. I will see you later. We will have a long talk."
"Sounds good." Mark turned to Barrow. "How is Sarbo? Did he make it?"
"Come and see for yourself, Cacon."
Barrow urged the gray into a lope. Mark followed him around the storehouse to a large cabin near the village wall. Yank was sitting on the porch carving a stick. When he saw Mark, he jumped up.
"Master, it is you. Wait until Sarbo hears."
He darted into the cabin. In seconds, Sarbo stepped out the front door. He had a wide grin on his face.
"So, you have returned.
It is probably because you found you were unable to finish your quest without me.
It's a long story. After I've rested, I'll tell it. Mark looked at his friend. It's good to see you well. I thought you said you were coming back here to die.
Sarbo cleared his throat. I never said that. You must have heard me wrong.
No, that is what you said, Master Sarbo. Yank squeezed past him and came out on the porch. In fact, all the way across the desert you talked about being buried and the songs you wanted.
Sarbo made a face. As you can see, I still have not figured out a way to get the runt to shut up. Even giving him his freedom did not work. Now he thinks he can talk all the more.
Mark turned. I'll be back, Sarbo. There is someone else I need to see. Who's that, Kakon? Can I come too?
Barrow trotted down the street after him.
I suppose. After all, we are going to your house. My house? Oh, you want to see my father. I think he is in the field today.
Mark didn't comment. He turned off the main street and rode up the dirt path to Dagon's cabin. He slid down and handed his reins to Barrow. Take care of my mount. It's had a long, hard trip.
Mark waited until Barrow led the animal to water and then knocked on the front door. It opened wide. Kakon! Megan exclaimed as she stepped outside. I'm so glad to see you. Sarbo led us to believe you could be gone for quite some time.
Are you really glad to see me?
A soft look came into her eyes.
Of course I am. I was not sure if I would ever see you again.
And would that have bothered you?
Megan frowned.
Did you come back just to fight with me?
Actually, Mark stepped closer and put his arms around her. I came back for this. He leaned down and kissed her.
Chapter 51.
Is it true that you were going to marry my sister? Barrow had a look of disgust on his face.
Who told you that?
Mark measured off one corner of his land and pounded a stake into the ground.
Everybody in the village has been talking about it for weeks. Is it true?
To tell you the truth, I have been thinking about it. See, if I marry Megan, then you and I will be brothers. I thought it might be worth it just for that. What do you think?
I think you are crazy. Nothing will be worth marrying Megan. She is too bossy and mean.
Did I hear someone talking about me? Megan said, coming up behind them.
Mark turned. He put down the rest of his stakes and wiped his hands on his pants.
Barrow here has just given me a rundown of all your faults. He thinks it would be a big mistake to marry you, you being so hard-headed and all.
Megan folded her arms.
Barrow, grandmother wants you at the cabin. She needs help with the vegetables.
Barrow's lip went out.
You made that up just to get rid of me.
Get going, Megan ordered.
They watched him climb onto the gray and ride away.
Mark faced Megan and took one of her hands.
Barrow says everyone in the village is talking about us.
Megan flushed.
It is the way of the Tusuk. They look forward to all celebrations.
And ours is going to be the greatest.
Mark took her other hand.
I just wish I had some crops planted. Things might be a little tough for us for a while.
Megan's chin went up.
I'm not worried. You are a good hunter. We will not go hungry.
Her compliment filled him. He thought himself too young for this, too young for marriage or being with another person. But it all seemed so right. According to the Tusuk customs, both of them were already past marriage age.
Speaking of hunting, your grandmother asked me to bring back some fresh meat for her today. If I don't get started, it will be dark before I get back.
Why don't you come with me?
Megan pulled her hands away.
You know I cannot leave the village and be alone with you. It is not done.
You're alone with me now.
His arm went around her shoulders.
And I remember a time not so long ago that you rode out to look for me when I was wounded. We were alone then, too.
That was different. We were younger then.
She tried to pull away.
Kakon, you will embarrass my family.
Mark gave her a quick kiss on the forehead.
We can't have that now, can we? He untied his beast and swung on. Tell your grandmother I will be back soon. If I don't find anything for her stew pot today, I will keep looking until I do.
Cacon?
Yes? I think it will be good for you not to be gone too long. Mark sat back. And I think Barrow was right. You are bossy. He kicked his mount into a run. The dirt cloud missed him by only a few inches.
Chapter 52.
Mark settled down next to his small fire. He was wishing he hadn't been so greedy, but had gone ahead and taken the two rabbit creatures he had seen earlier. Because he had wanted to impress Megan and her family, he'd let them go and search for larger game. But he hadn't found any. Close to dark, he had come upon the fresh tracks of a trag, a large elk-like animal. But now it was too late to track it. He would have to try to pick up the trail again in the morning. He leaned back on his elbows. Life in this world wasn't so bad. He did what he wanted and went where he pleased. He was a Tusuk warrior, and in a few months, he would have a wife. They could start a family. He had deliberately squeezed out all thoughts of his other life. He calculated that he was somewhere close to 17 now. In this world, that was a grown man. Sarbo still teased him, but treated him with more respect than he had before. Dagon had seemed pleased that Mark had chosen to ask Megan. In the months since he had been back, they'd had a long talk about Mark's run-in with the Mercon, and decided that if the Overlord or any of his men ever came to the village again, they would simply be told that Mark had never returned. Mark closed his eyes and was about to drift off to sleep when he heard a branch break. Silently, he reached for the crossbow near his fingertips and rolled away from the fire into the shadows.
Ho, the fire! I am a weary traveler looking for food and a place to spend the night.
Mark stayed in the shadows.
Come forward and lay down your weapons.
A man wearing armor walked out in the opening and leaned down to place his sword on the ground. When he did, there was a rustling in the brush behind Mark. He rolled, but it was too late. A large man jumped on him and wrestled the crossbow out of his hands. Mark struggled, but it was no use. He was pinned solidly to the ground. The other man picked up his sword and walked over.
Well, well, what have we here? It appears to be our young outlaw.
Let him up, Franco. I think we know this one.
Roan?
Mark scrambled out from under his attacker.
Is that you? And Franco? What are you doing way out here?
Looking for you.
Roan helped him to his feet, and Franco patted his shoulder apologetically.
Of course, we never expected to find you camping out in the hills.
Why are you not in your village keeping company with your girl? Did she throw you over?
No. In fact, we're getting married in a few months. I'm just out hunting.
Not having much luck by the look of things.
Never mind about that. You said you were looking for me. Why?
Roan walked to the fire and sat down. I am afraid we come with bad news. Jod and the others are all dead. Mordo caught them at the traders on the other side of the river. He killed everyone, including the old trader and his family. Franklin and I were guarding the camp, or we would have been with them.
I'm sorry, Roan.
Mark sat beside him.
Look, the two of you can come live with me. I have a good cabin in the village.
There is more, Cacon.
Mordo has taken his father's place. You wounded the Mercon so severely that he stays in his rooms now. Mordo has vowed revenge on you. He burned the forest looking for you, and now he and most of his father's army are on their way here to find you.
Mark swallowed. It took a few seconds for the impact of Roan's message to sink in. Mordo was determined to kill him, and he would stop at nothing to see that it was done.
I've put my village in danger, Roan. I never should have come back.
Mark began kicking dirt on the fire.
I have to warn them, and then I will leave. Forever.
Where will you go, Cacon? The Mercon's son will hunt you no matter where you run.
Mark stopped.
I will run only so long as it pleases me. When the Murkan Sun is in my territory, then I will fight.
Now that sounds more like it, Roan said. It just so happens that at the moment Franklin and I are homeless. We would be more than happy to come along.
Frankel nodded vigorously. Mark shook his head. It is my fight. I can't ask you to risk your lives.
Who was asking?
Besides, I owe Mordo. He is the one who turned me in, remember?
You are a good friend, Roan.
Mark's voice was dangerously cold and even. But this is something I have to do alone.
Chapter 53.
Please try to understand, Magon. I'm leaving because I care for you and your people. As long as I am here, you are all in danger. Mordo will burn the whole village and kill everyone in it. He doesn't care whom he hurts, as long as it gets him closer to me.
But our warriors will fight for you. They have taken a blood oath. My father says we will fight to the last man if necessary.
Don't you see? If I leave here, no one else has to die. There's no other way.
Let him go, Magon.
Lita stepped out on the porch. Kekkon has chosen the right way. If you care for him, you will not hold him back.
Magon buried her face in his chest.
When this is over.
Mark held her close.
When it is over.
Barrow brought up the silver mount.
You have much food and supplies, Kekkon. Your pouch with the black exploding powder is wrapped to keep it dry.
Thank you, Barrow. Mark took the reins. I'm going to need you to take care of things for me again. Especially watch out for your sister. Even if she is a little hard-headed and bossy.
He smiled down at Magon.
Dagon stood up from the bench where he was sitting with Sarbo, Roan, and Frankel.
I wish you much luck, Kekkon.
And remember, this will always be your home.
Mark nodded. I'll remember.
Goodbye, infant, Sarbo bellowed. I have decided I do not care for funerals much. Come back alive.
I'll see what I can do.
Roan cocked his head.
Are you sure Frankel and I cannot come? We would welcome the opportunity to pay Mordo for his treachery.
Not this time. Mark let Magon go and jumped onto his mount. He gave them all one last long look. He tried to imprint their faces on his memory. It was time to leave. A warning blast sounded from the tower, immediately followed by two more. Mark pulled up. He'd waited too long. Mordo was already there.
I'll lead them away, Mark shouted. He sank his heels into the mount sides and raced down the road.
Two warriors were scrambling to close a front gate. Mark darted through the narrow opening and stopped on the other side. In the distance, Mordo and his army were marching toward the village. Mark stood by the wall and waited until he was sure they could see him clearly. Then he headed for the mountain. It worked. Mordo and his army broke into a run and came after him. Mark flew up the hill, jumping and crashing through the brush. Years ago, when he had tried to escape slavery this way, he hadn't known where he was going. Now he did. He knew exactly where he was taking them. He only hoped they would follow. Behind him he could hear orders being shouted and the sound of running animals. Once he was over the crest of the hill, he slipped into the valley below and rode down the canyon in the open to make sure they didn't lose sight of him. An arrow whistled past his head. Mark turned off into a thicket. There was an old path that was almost overgrown. He had found it the month before when he was out hunting. The army had to slow down and travel single file through the thorny brush. By the time they made it through the tangle, Mark was already up on the next hill watching them. He let his beast rest and waited for them to regroup. He counted them. 40 men. Not an extremely large army, but enough to overwhelm most villages. Someone spotted him on the hillside and yelled. At once, the chase was on. Mark moved the silver beast into a trot. If they kept on like this by nightfall, he would have them well away from the village. After that, he wasn't really sure what his plans were. The main thing was to keep them on unfamiliar territory and keep them moving. Mordo was more than willing to cooperate. He was relentless in the chase. Twice he thought he and his men had marked cornered, only to find that the warrior had escaped from under their noses. They followed him until the daylight vanished. Then Mordo reluctantly ordered them to make a cold camp on the side of a mountain. Mark made camp too, in the rocks just above them, where he could keep an eye on their activities. He slept for a few hours, then made sure his mount was tied securely and crept down to their camp. He lay watching for a long time, until he was certain the guard watching their mounts was asleep. Then he collected the bridles from their beasts, which wandered off as soon as they were untied. He dumped the bridles into a nearby deep pit. He had planned to relieve the group of some of their supplies as well, but one of the loose mounts knocked over a small dead tree, awakening the men. Mark returned to his own camp, gathered his things, and circled to the bottom of the mountain to wait for morning. Chapter 54. Now that most of Mordo's men were on foot, Mark didn't have to hurry. He led them along slowly and used the time to plan. They'd been traveling for 2 days and were headed straight for the jungle. At first, Mark was worried that Mordo might not continue the chase, but Roan had been right. The Murkan's son was not about to let anything stop him from getting revenge. On the outskirts of the jungle, Mark got off his mount and removed his supply bags and weapons. Where he was going now was no place for the big animal. The beast would not be able to walk through the tangled trees and vines. He stroked the animal's soft neck. "You go back to the village. They'll take care of you there." He stepped back and slapped the beast hard on the rear. It jumped and then bolted off in the direction they had come from. Mark shouldered his crossbow and supplies and entered the jungle. He was careful to leave footprints for Mordo and his men to find. The screaming birds immediately began making a fuss. Something about the sound made him smile. He made a wide circle, deliberately avoiding water. Mordo and his men would have to find their own. He wasn't going to show them where it lay. Mark walked to the burned-out village of the Arrow people. There was nothing left except a few blackened spots on the ground. He stood in the middle of the space, remembering what it had been like. He'd been so glad to find people back then. Lita and her tribe had been his first contacts in Transal. They had taught him that in this world, war and killing weren't a part of life. They were life. He walked to the place where the Arrow people had cut the path out of the jungle. It was completely overgrown now. Mark found a good spot to hide his supplies and took his water pouch to see if the stream was still there. After he had found the water, he gathered his things and headed deeper into the jungle. He wanted Mordo to follow him, but from here on he would make it more difficult. Occasionally he left footprints and broke off twigs, but he moved faster than before. He wanted to get to the dark jungle and have a chance to prepare before the army got there. It started raining. Mark remembered how it used to rain suddenly here. A clap of thunder broke the silence, and the drops flooded down in sheets. He knew how to stay dry by sticking close to the broadleaf trees, but as he traveled deeper into the jungle, he didn't feel the rain at all. It could not penetrate the heavy overgrowth. He passed through the clearing where he had killed the howling thing, and went on to the large pool. He was careful not to leave any sign that he had been there. When he left, he would cover his tracks so that Mordo and his men would not find the water. There was a rabbit creature watering at the edge. Mark moved closer until he could see his reflection. The young man looking back at him was a stranger. He had powerful shoulders and a full chest. His hair hung to the middle of his back and his tanned hide clothing fit closely. So this is what the years had done to him. He liked it. The whisker-stubbled face looking back at him was a good one, capable and strong. A thought flashed through his mind. If he had not come to Transall, he probably would have looked entirely different. He knelt and scooped up a handful of the cool water. Then he carefully backtracked to the trail he was creating for Mordo's men. Finally, he made it to the meadow at the edge of the dark jungle. This was where he had spent those first critical months, learning how to survive. He wondered at the thought of it. It had seemed hopeless back then. Now he could exist anywhere he chose. The animals and the elements are no longer a threat. In a strange way, they had become his friends. Something stirred in the bushes. Mark knew without looking what it was. A buffalo creature had picked up his scent and was looking for him. He stood completely still and waited for it to give up and go away. Then he moved across the meadow to the spot where he had built his treehouse. The jungle had taken it over. His ladder was still there, and he hacked away at the vines until he could climb it. The floor of his old house had fallen through. He looked up to the top branches, half expecting to see the little white monkey bear, Willie, that had been his friend during those rough times. The thunder rumbled again. He could hear the rain pelting the tops of the trees. Before he climbed down, he stripped several long pieces of bark off the weathered branches he had used to make the floor of his treehouse and tucked them under his arm. The dark jungle still unnerved him. He stepped into the shadows and let his eyes adjust to the dim light. If Mordo and his men were smart, they would not follow him here. It was a dangerous place, even when you knew your way around. Mark tied long vines across the trail at ankle height in a few strategic places. Then he hid his pieces of dry bark. Later, he would pour some of his black powder on them. He tested a nearby hanging vine and quickly, almost effortlessly, climbed it. In the top branches of the tree, he tied his supply bags to a limb. The clicking started. Mark grabbed some tree rocks, crouched on the branch, and waited for the monkey bears to appear. He had played this trick on them years before. They assembled in the tree to his right. Mark remained motionless until they were about to attack him, expecting him to walk by in the ground below. Then Mark jumped up, growled, and tossed the rocks at them. He laughed as they raced for cover in the jungle. One little white creature stayed behind. Mark stared into its eyes. "Willie? Is that you?" For a moment it looked as if the monkey bear might stay. Mark held his hand out. Suddenly it whirled and raced after the others into the safety of darkness. "I guess it's been too long," Mark muttered. He swung to the ground and walked out of the dark jungle. There was no sign of Mordo and his men. He didn't understand. He had practically blazed the trail for them to follow. They should be here by now. He checked his supply of arrows and rested his hand on the hilt of his sword. There's nothing to do but try to find them. He took a step and a tree rock hit him in the center of the back. Mark turned. A monkey bear was sitting on the ground just outside the shadows, looking perfectly innocent. Mark picked up the rock and tossed it back. Like lightning, the monkey bear reached up and caught it. "Willie?" Mark sat down and waited for the creature to come closer. It took its time, but finally it was standing close. Mark gave the signal to climb on his back. Without hesitation, Willie leaped on his shoulders and threw his arms around Mark's neck. "Good to see you," Mark said. Willie chattered something, and Mark reached around and stroked his head. "You wait here. I have to go check on something. We'll get reacquainted when I come back." Mark set him on the ground. Willie chattered a scolding that followed Mark across the meadow. It reminded him of the last time he had left his little friend. Except for the usual sounds, the jungle was quiet. This baffled Mark. He was sure he had left a trail they could follow. Where were they? He backtracked to the clearing where he had killed the howling thing. There was no sign of the army. Then, instead of going back through the burned-out village, Mark cut across to the spot where he thought the army would enter. It was almost dark, and he could see campfires outside the jungle. Apparently, the men had decided not to come in after him. Mark crept closer and hid behind the trunk of a large red tree. He could see Mordo pacing back and forth with a scowl on his face. Another soldier was loudly complaining that the small troop he had sent into the jungle to do some scouting ought to be back by now. So that's it, Mark thought. Mordo wasn't sure he wanted to go into the jungle. Instead, he had sent in a scouting expedition. Well, that wasn't good enough. Mark backed into the shadows. Tomorrow, he would think of a way to convince Mordo to join him. Chapter 55. The heavy explosion rocked the quiet morning. Three men who had been sleeping too close to the fire when Mark had tossed his homemade bomb were hurled sideways by the blast. Dust billowed and the camp came alive in seconds. One soldier spotted a tall running figure. "There he goes!" he shouted to the others. "After him," Mordo ordered. "A sack of tribute to the man who kills the outlaw." Mark darted from tree to tree, allowing them only brief glimpses of him. When he was sure they had taken the bait, he headed straight for the dark jungle. In one of the small clearings, he heard a buffalo creature snorting. It had blood on its horns and face and was busy tossing what looked like the remains of one of the scouts in the air. Mark shuddered and looked away. He had other things to think about. It made him uncomfortable to know that Mordo's scouts were somewhere out in front of him. Behind him, he could hear Mordo's men coming. He circled the clearing and waited on the other side. The army startled the buffalo creature. It pawed the ground and charged. A dozen arrows sank into the beast's head and sides, but it kept coming. It gored one soldier and would have kept fighting if Mordo hadn't thrust his sword through its heart. The creature fell to one knee and then toppled over dead. Mordo didn't stop. He ordered the rest to keep searching for Mark. Mark deliberately made noise in the brush and then slipped away. When he neared the red meadow in front of the dark jungle, he stopped to watch and listen. There was no sign of the scouting party. He crossed the meadow and waited in the shadows near his old treehouse. He didn't wait long. Mordo and his men stepped out of the brush and scanned the trees. One of the soldiers began to scream. He had stepped on a colony of firebugs. The warrior rolled on the ground trying to scrape them off. Mordo kept moving. Mark darted out of the shadows long enough to be seen briefly, then moved back inside the dark jungle. He shimmied up a vine and swung to a tree branch. Mordo's army marched into the darkness after him. Using the vines, Mark swung from tree to tree until he could drop to the spot where he had left his dry tree bark. He quickly poured out some of his powder, placed the bark in two strategic places, and swung back up into one of the tall trees. The birds screeched loudly, announcing the army's arrival. Next came the clicking. The monkey bears greeted the strangers with their usual bombardment of tree rocks. Mark sat patiently on a tree branch with his crossbow loaded. Mordo continued to lead his men through the dark jungle. He cursed and threatened Mark with what he would do to him. Mark laughed scornfully and called down, "You have to catch me first, Mordo." Mordo searched the treetops for the source of the laughter. Suddenly he and the men leading the column tripped on one of the vines Mark had tied. They fell face first into the swamp of quicksand. It was so dark that several others behind them stumbled into the trap, not realizing where they were until it was too late. Their heavy armor made fighting their way out impossible. The remaining soldiers scattered and tried to leave the way they had come in. Mark sent a fire arrow into the first pile of powder. It exploded and sent several men flying. Before the others had time to think, he shot a second arrow. Only a handful of Mordo's men were left. Mark imitated the chilling call of the howling thing. They started running. Chapter 56. Mark sat under his old treehouse, sharing tree rocks with Willie. Yesterday he had followed the frightened remnant of the Murkan's army to make sure they left the jungle. He felt free again. Now he could go back to his village and get on with his life. He patted Willie's head. "How would you like to come with me, boy? Barrow will love you." Thinking about going home made him gulp down the rest of his tree rock juice and gather his things. If he hurried, he could make it to the valley in less than 3 days. "Well, how about it?" Mark gave Willie the signal to climb up. "Are you coming?" The monkey bear clicked loudly and then jumped on Mark's back. "That's more like it." Mark shifted his load and started across the meadow. He was almost to the other side when he heard an awful whirring sound and something ripped into his arm. It was an arrow. Pain tore through his body. 4 of Mordo's men stepped out from behind trees with their weapons aimed at him. The scouting party. Mark had completely forgotten about them. They obviously didn't know that Mordo was dead, and the rest of the army was scattered. Mark pretended to raise his hands in surrender, and then abruptly dived into the cover of some trees. Willie rolled off as Mark hit the ground. The little monkey bear climbed the nearest tree, clicking in terror. Mark made it to his feet and started running. The scouts were right behind him. He crashed through the jungle, not caring which direction he was taking. His only thought was to get away. He couldn't shake them. His arm was going numb, and he felt weak. He kept running, dodging to the right and left. A loud clap of thunder crashed through the air. The sky lit up with flashes of lightning. Mark ran through the pouring rain with Mordo's men now only yards behind him. He spotted a boulder to his left and sprinted toward it. If he could just reach it, he could use it for cover. He half fell behind it, reached for an arrow and slid his crossbow off his arm. His wounded arm was too weak to pull the string back. The scouts were pounding toward him. With all the strength he could muster, he dragged himself up on the boulder. He pulled out his sword and prepared to leap down on them. Lightning struck the boulder, sending balls of electricity shooting in all directions. A tube of blue light enveloped Mark and brutally shook his body. He could feel himself falling. Mark could hear people standing over him talking. He felt for his sword. Somehow he had to stand and fight. He was determined to take down a few more of Mordo's men before he died. Groggily, he rose to his feet, swinging his sword. He heard screaming and the sound of people calling to him in a strange language. He focused. In front of him was a strange little fountain. He was no longer in the jungle. Instead, he was inside some type of building. The people staring at his clothes and weapons were not from Transal. A small boy stepped out of the crowd. "Mister, do you need a doctor? I think there's one here in the mall." Mark pulled the arrow out of the fleshy part of his arm. There was no wound. He looked up at the people. The little boy had spoken to him in English. This was his time. His world. The blue light had brought him back. Epilogue. 20 years later. "Dr. Harrison, Dr. Mark Harrison, report to the second floor." The voice continued to boom over the intercom. Mark felt someone jostle his elbow. He looked up from his microscope. "What is it, Karen? Did you find something?" The young lab assistant smiled. "They're calling you again, Dr. Harrison." She pointed to the intercom. Mark looked at his watch. "Oh, great. Looks like I'm late for the board meeting again. Get my briefcase, will you? And a copy of that data we were working on this morning." "It's all here." Karen handed him the case. "Don't forget your tie." Mark fumbled in his pocket for the wrinkled clip-on. "I hate these things." "I know, but you are trying to make an impression." Mark sighed. "Right. Maybe this time I'll convince them." He headed for the door. "Good luck, Doctor. We're all rooting for you." Mark waved and disappeared through the door. A dark-haired young man in a white lab coat walked over. "Do you think he has a chance at the grant money?" Karen shrugged. "I hope so. He's obsessed with finding a cure. He's already come up with several possible vaccines to the virus, but he has to convince the government that these diseases are a matter of global importance."
"He's a strange one.
Last night, when he did the final test on the new Ebola virus inoculations, he looked at the ceiling and whispered, 'Megan, this is for you,' or something like that. I mean, what's a Megan? Weird."
"He's all right," Karen said. "I think he just needs a break from work. Some friends of mine and I are planning a hike in the desert this weekend through the Magruder missile range. Maybe I'll invite him to come along."
"The doc?"
"Yeah, why not?
He's such a bookworm. I doubt he'd last a day out there in the wild."
"I don't know. I think he might surprise you. There's something about him. Have you noticed? It's a look he gets sometimes, almost like he's..."
"What?"
"I can't quite put my finger on it, but it's like he's... almost savage?"
"Ha! The doc is as tame as they come. And if you decide to invite him to go, you guys had better take it real easy on him."
"He'll be fine," Karen laughed. "It's just a hike in the desert. What could happen?"
The End. You've been listening to The Transol Saga by Gary Paulson, narrated by Johnny Heller. This work is copyrighted 1998 by Gary Paulson. This recording is copyrighted 1999 by Recorded Books. If you've enjoyed this book and this performance, Recorded Books recommends Armageddon Summer by Jane Yolen and Bruce Colville, narrated by Kate Forbes and Johnny Heller. And The Big Wander by Will Hobbs, narrated by Ed Sala. You'll find a wide selection of titles in the Recorded Books catalog, including bestsellers, mysteries, classics, histories, and more. So to order another recorded book, or for a copy of our latest listing, please call us using the toll-free number found on the back of the book. You can order by phone with any major credit card, or by writing to us, or by faxing us. Don't forget to ask about easy 30-day rentals by mail. On our website, you can browse the catalog, hear about the latest releases, place orders, or tune in to narrator profiles and author interviews. So visit us there at www.recordedbooks.com. And thank you for being a Recorded Books reader.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.